Welcome to Real Estate Radio Live, an informative and engaging podcast discussing everything you need to know about the world of real estate. Your host, Joe Cacera, provides you with insight and guidance on how to buy, sell, finance, and invest in real estate. He also offers real estate tax management strategies, new construction advice, home improvement tips, and much, much more. And now, to guide you around the world of real estate, here's your host and Real Estate Radio Live team leader, Joe Cacera.
Welcome in, Joe Cacera with Real Estate Radio Live. Happy New Year. I'm not sure. This is the second show. I think Jack and I did a show.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I had to think about that for a second. Happy New Year,
New
Mike.
Year. Happy New Year. New Year for me.
Happy New Year.
Started in the middle of January.
That's right. That is true, isn't it? Here we are. We're a little behind the time. So, Happy New Year to those that are just tuning in for the first time. And on Facebook, and also for those that download the podcast a little bit later. It's an exciting year ahead. We have a lot to share, a lot of stuff going on. As we wrapped up 2019, we did a couple of shows, I think, kind of summarizing 19. But now we're going to focus on 2020, specifically here in the Bay Area, because I think, and Mike and I will get into this today, we're going to do some predictions based on some data and history that Mike and I have been following for a long time, and specifically, you know, you need to have an idea on these predictions, what's been going on in the past, what we see, what kind of trends we follow these, and then what might we see. And a lot of this is also related to cost of money, timing, a little bit political environment. I mean, let's face it, anytime there's a presidential election a year, some things get a little bit weird sometimes, although it's been weird for a while. Let's not go down that path.
Yeah, let's not make it a political show, but yeah. It's definitely going to be weird. We'll see.
That could be a kind word. Yeah. Anyway, welcome in and looking forward to it. Mike and I are with you. A little change of venue, not that everybody's holding their breath, but just for those that are anticipating Mike and I's return, we're going to be doing Tuesdays here going forward for the most part. Again, just a reminder, we do podcasts on Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays to keep it pretty consistent. And for social media purposes, for some of those that follow, we do it around 3 o'clock. It doesn't matter to most. We're downloading the podcast later. So today, we're going to focus on predictions for 2020, specifically in the housing market here in the Silicon Valley, what you should know. And the reason why I'd really like, I hope that people take this to heart, is that this is a great, great opportunity for those that are either buying, moving up, or making some decisions about your future in the housing market. Yeah. So what do you say?
Yeah, let's do it. So I think, first off, inventory, when I was looking at it, tracking it through the holidays, mm-hmm. it got really low.
Yeah.
It was in the couple hundred range for, again, for those of you listening, we often focus on Silicon Valley.
Right.
And the heart of that's really Santa Clara County, which is a giant county. And, there's only a couple hundred properties for sale in the entire county. It's doubled already early on into January, but we're still low. It's still about 700. I think about two-thirds of those are single family, and the rest are condos and townhouses. Okay. So, but it's still low. And I think, you know, obviously we've talked about, I don't know how many times on the show we've talked about the Super Bowl bump and then tax season. Those are two big times when inventory really starts to increase. But, yeah, it's still relatively low. And I think that the first part of the year is going to be kind of revert back into good buyer activity on listings, potentially multiple offers. And that might even continue into the rest of the year. I don't know yet. But I'll have some other predictions based on industry experts.
So that's good to know. So you're saying that right before Christmas or before the holidays, since then there was, what was there? 500, 600?
I think it was even less.
Wow.
I think
now,
it was less than 500.
Now we're 700 or 800, roughly?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So double in the last 30, 45 days.
Right.
And so the good news is that's still low. And are you we talked about this, but just again, for the sake of the people listening, that's important for them to kind of set the stage for some decisions that might make, Mike, is that some of that was due to seasonal issues, maybe. I mean, typically before the holidays, you're going to see a drop off.
It was, and I think it was two main reasons. One was seasonal.
Uh-huh.
Secondly was, I think it just, a lot of properties got gobbled up.
Yeah.
The rates were really good.
Yeah.
And I think, as we've been talking about all last year on the podcast, there was a lot of opportunity, and I think a lot of people took advantage of it. We saw it firsthand.
Yeah.
And there was opportunity to get deals, and you know, we negotiated some deals where they were getting off the listing price and getting the right terms they wanted as a buyer, and so those things were happening. So I think it was twofold.
Yeah. And not to, but I'll say it anyway, to get those people to jump off the fence. You know, it's kind of interesting. I'm not saying that my business is indicative of the market, but it is interesting. If I go back for years, typically the way my business works, the market kind of goes along or vice versa. And what I mean by that is, I don't know if this is just a coincidence, Mike, but I'm not kidding you. In the last 3 or 4 days, I've had like 6 or 7 people go on the contract that have been pre-approved for a couple months.
I believe it.
I don't know if that's more of a coincidence. Maybe it's timing. People, again, the whole Christmas thing's over.
Yeah, I think it's that. I think people are coming out of hibernation, just like we are doing this podcast. They're seizing the opportunity before the competition comes out of hibernation, too. And it's kind of like on the seller side of things, the conversations I'm having already this year is, hey, do we get it back on before Super Bowl? Because we know after Super Bowl, there's going to be other competition in your neighborhood for listings.
Right.
Do you want to deal with that unless you're going to price your house very competitively? Do you want to deal with the other houses that you're going to be being compared to?
Right.
Or could you, do you want to go on first and, you know, and be the only one out there and the only choice?
So let's spend a little time on both categories. What I mean is, so you have, let's speak directly to and have a fireside conversation with the potential sellers.
Yeah.
Because then I want to ask you questions about potential buyers. Because it is I think it is a unique kind of time period in that. Well, let's talk about both, and then you and I could give our opinions on it. So if you're talking directly to sellers right now at the moment, what would you be their advice? And they sit down with you and they say, Mike, you know, I want to list my home. I just don't know. Should I do it now? Should I do it in the spring? What would you be?
Yeah.
What kind of conversation?
It depends on the type of property they have and their willingness to prepare the property for sale. But to directly answer your question without going without going around it, I'm telling people to get it on ASAP if you know they're willing to do a little bit of prep work and price it pretty competitively. But I think if someone has an absolute gem of a property, I think if they wanted stretch it out a little bit, they'd have a better chance with more competition.
Right.
So, yeah, I think that directly answers that. But I'm telling most people, like, hey, let's get it going. I mean, the weather's good. People are out there looking. There's activity. Rates are good.
Inventory's still low, so that would mean they have a little better chance,
right?
I mean,
exactly.
Theoretically.
There's less competition.
Yeah, right.
I say get it on as soon as you're ready to.
Okay.
You know, put it on the market and go for it.
Would that also would matter on the category of price points? Like, let's say $1 million home versus if someone's getting ready to list a $5 million home with you, would you be say the same thing?
Not really. I think it. I think either way.
Okay.
I think, you know, if you don't want to compete with other people,
just
go for it. Luxury real estate always is going to take longer over time. Anyway.
Just less buyers.
Just less buyers.
Yeah.
That one might be a little more lax on timeline because you know it's not going to sell in 2 weeks.
Right.
You know, so I think that one, you probably to answer your question, let that one lie a little bit.
Yeah.
But the normal price point, I'd say go for it.
Okay. Yeah, I would agree. I think it's a great opportunity. And as we're talking about this, we'll kind of sprinkle in some suggestions along the way. And as we talk about this, Mike, I want to bring it up again because I have two people that are doing this right now, and it reminds me. And we do have a program called cross-collateralization. So you can cross. A lot of people have heard me say this, but it's worth reminding you, especially now at the beginning of the year. Anyone that's nervous or concerned about, gee, I don't want to list my home or I'm afraid to do this because I can't go buy a home until I sell my home, we could solve that problem. Most of the time, we have a solution, Mike and I. If you're concerned about, gee, I don't want to put my home on the market because I need to sell my home to go buy a home. In many cases, you don't. Now, not for some people. It depends how much equity, how much you owe, what you make. There are some factors that go into it. I just want to drop this in here as we're talking about. If you're listening to this podcast and yourself, friend, coworker, relative, doesn't matter. If they're thinking about this and they're in that dilemma, have them give a call and check in with us because we have a cross-collateral program that allows people to go out and purchase a home before they sell their home. It's temporary financing. It's very reasonable. It's a little difficult to understand, so we're not going to go into details on the show, but it could be done, and I have two people that I'm doing it with in the last couple of days.
And I think it's worth taking a look at, especially if they haven't looked at how much equity maybe they they have gained over the last year, 2 years. I know the media maybe has said the market's taken a slide, but some neighborhoods haven't, you know, so it's worth taking even just taking a look at their equity and seeing what they if they can utilize the cross-collateralization.
Yeah. So sellers, you heard that. I think I would agree. I mean, it's a great time to get the home out there. You have less competition. There's a chance, a better chance, that you're going to, with less competition, especially if your home is unique, as Mike mentioned, you have a chance to get a premium potentially for your home. And the upside, the other side of that, which you talked about, Mike, too, is to get something on the market now, let's say in the next 30 days, and let's just say that things really started rolling. And the reason why you're saying it's a good thing to get it going right away if you're serious, because maybe 90 to 120 days from now, inventory could double again.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I'll predict that. Don't you think? Yeah, for sure. I think that's one of the...
So it could go to 1,500, 1,600.
Easily by March or April.
Okay.
It should be. And then by the summertime, we might be in that 2,000 range again like we were last year.
Okay.
Which would be considered more of a normal market. So, yeah, I think, to answer your question, it could double.
Good. All right, so let's talk about buyers. Again, we're going to talk directly to the buyers, and we'll drop some of our feedback and input into that. You're sitting down with a buyer right now, and you're talking to them, and the first question is now a good time? Should I pull the trigger, Mike, or should I wait until there's more inventory? Should I wait? Because here's the other one you and I hear a lot. Should I wait? Because the news and the media say that, you know, housing's coming down a little bit more.
Yeah. I would say...
Screw the media.
Yeah, screw the media.
Don't listen to this.
Yeah. I think, and you could probably speak on it better than I can, one of the predictions I was going to talk about, too, is mortgage rates will remain stable and under 5% through 2020. Would you agree with that?
I would agree. I think as it looks right now with what's going on in the market and the world economy and everything else and what the Fed's doing, you know, rates are 30-year money is in the 3%. That's crazy to begin with.
Yeah.
So to answer your question, I can't see rates going actually any higher than maybe 4.25 or so, or 4.5 in the next year. But again, we don't know that. But for prediction purposes, based on the material that we study, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so to get back to the original question, what would a buyer do?
Yeah.
I'm just based on what we just talked about with rates, I mean, what are you waiting for?
Mm-hmm.
I think.
I agree.
And so the flip side of this from, we already talked about what a seller should do in the beginning of the year. The flip side is, there might not be as many buyers out there thinking the same thing. Mm-hmm. They might not be ready yet. Maybe they made a New Year's resolution to buy a house in 2020, but they're waiting until March or April.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're ready to go, get out there and do it. There might be holdover homes. Here's another tip, or you know, you can look into is there are holdover homes from 2019 that are still on the market that are probably getting really desperate right now. They're probably ready to go if they've been on, especially since they've been on through the holidays and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Those are opportunities for you to get a deal.
Okay.
And I don't know why they've been sitting out there for so long. Oftentimes there's different reasons. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was way overpriced. Maybe that someone got murdered in the property. I don't know. And if you're okay with that, that's fine. Yeah. But for the most part, typically when houses sit, it's a pricing issue or it's a preparation issue or some other... I don't want to get into all the reasons, but those might be opportunities too to get a deal.
Yeah, I would agree. I think the buyers, well, and this is nothing new for me. I mean, some people that are listening to the podcast on a regular basis, you know, if you go back, I've been talking strongly about how I think buyers should get out there for the last, you know, almost the whole 2019, certainly the last half of 2019. And I really, when I say I don't care, I mean... When someone's the objection, if someone's saying, Joe, I'm concerned, or Mike, I'm concerned because I've seen that, you know, housing's came down 5 or 10% in some areas, 15, okay. I would say, so what? And the reason I say, so what, not to brush it off is don't worry about it, but if you're in real estate long term, if this is your primary residence and your goal is to stay in this house for at least 5 to 7 years or more, it's a great time. Yeah. The reason why is, first of all, let's just say it went down 10%. So you just saved 10%, whether it was luck or not, in general in the market. And let's just say, just take the worst case scenario. If you buy a house for $1 million and let's say in the next year you didn't time it perfect, God forbid, and it goes down another 10%. So now your home's worth $900,000, right? Mm-hmm. But you're in a home you love, and if the market turns around, and I know people think I'm crazy. I think that sometime this year in the Silicon Valley, I think we could get into another strong seller's market.
Mm-hmm.
You know, could be wrong, but
I think even in the first half of the year.
Yeah. So as a buyer, you want to avoid, believe me, anybody that went through that war, you want to avoid strong seller's market.
Yes, exactly.
It is not a pretty time to be a buyer.
It's a miserable time. And, I would agree with that. One of the other predictions is that home prices will appreciate almost 6% this year. And some of these predictions are countrywide.
Yeah,
nationwide, yeah. Thank you. Not necessarily focused on Silicon Valley, but I think that's a possibility. I think that's a possibility too, mm-hmm. Across the country.
Yeah. So great time to be a buyer. Now, again, we'll always say, you'll hear us say this on the show, when we say it's a great time to be a buyer, primarily we're talking about a person that's targeting a primary residence or a second home, something you plan to own or keep for a while. Please know that there's a little asterisk or a little, caveat here. If you're a speculator, if you're an investor, if you're a person that's looking for spec or flipping or something, totally different story. Just make sure I'm clear on that. If you're saying, is this a great market, or I'm going to go out and, homes have come down 10, 15%, so I'm going to go out and buy and flip, and that's a totally different thing. I would say be careful what any kind of market you do that in, because that's a tougher one, right?
Yeah.
I mean, to try to speculate.
Yeah.
What's going to happen in six to 8 months or 10 months? Or
I know developers or people that are flipping homes. I mean, that's getting tougher.
Tougher one. Yeah.
Those guys and gals are getting a little bit more conservative as time goes on. Whereas if we were talking 3 years ago, 4 years ago, they were not.
Yeah.
They were buying up whatever the hell they wanted.
Yeah.
And making money on it, and they didn't have to be smart.
Yeah. So absolutely.
A lot different.
Speaking of buyers, we're going to throw some things in again that pertain to buyers. And one of the things that a lot of people may not know about, Mike, and unfortunately we don't see a lot of this business here, but I wish we had more and I hope we get more, and that is veterans financing, VA financing. Because if anybody deserves a benefit, it's our veterans.
Absolutely.
Our men and women. So one of the things that changed in 2020 is there is an unlimited ceiling for VA financing.
Yeah,
there used to be a ceiling, $720,000 or whatever it is, higher balance conforming, jumbo. Now it doesn't matter. And so if you're looking for $1 million, $1.5 million or whatever, if you could afford it, a lot of VA financing is still 100% financing.
Yeah, 100%.
Again, you have to be able to qualify and afford it.
Yeah.
But just keep that in mind for those people, especially in a high cost area like we live in around the Bay Area. We would love nothing more than to help veterans, of course, get into homes.
Absolutely. Then there's some other ins and outs of outside of the financing, mm-hmm. with VA financing, when you're in contract with a VA loan,
mm-hmm.
there are some things that you have to look out for from a property condition standpoint,
right.
that we can talk about if you are a VA. So make sure you are working with someone that understands.
Good point.
How VA financing works.
Different.
It is different.
Yeah.
But again, It's great. I think they deserve it.
Absolutely. So buyers, great time to get in the market. Here we are. This is remarkable. Now, sometimes you do get better pricing, Mike, for purchase financing. Some investors do put on, improvements specifically for purchase business.
Yeah.
So to give you an idea today, I just priced a 30-year jumbo out today. It's like 60 LTV, good credit scores. But 3.5% fixed on jumbo 30. Money.
Yeah, it's great.
That's crazy.
I love it.
I mean, $1 million+ for 3.5%. The reason I bring that up is this is jumbo money. Now, conforming, it's kind of funny to say this. This is a wacky world we live in. But conforming rates aren't even that good to a certain extent, depend. But they're still in the mid to high threes. So
why is that? Why do you think that is?
A number of different reasons. So a lot of the market has to depend on, who's serving the market, the investors, what their appetite is at the time.
Yeah.
Sometimes, a lot of jumbo lenders will get out of the market. The way they get out of it is they don't say they're going to pull out of it, but they raise their rates so no one's going to use them.
Yeah.
And then there are times that they really want to get back in for some reason. And I can tell you that a lot of banks these days, what they're trying to do, especially with purchase business, and when you see usually aggressive jumbo financing, it usually means they're trying to also get those clients to invest their assets with them too.
Yeah.
So there's a little strategy behind that. Conforming is just, that's more government regulated kind of, you know, money, and that's where a lot of lenders raise capital. They buy and sell that conforming stuff a lot.
Got it.
And so those are, anyway, it's a little complicated, but the bottom line is, any way you look at this, let's just put it this way. If you have decent credit scores and you can prove your income, all things being equal, all day long you can get money for less than 4%. I think that's the best way to put it. Could be low threes, could be mid threes, could be high threes. Either way, those are good. Those are good.
Go out and buy something.
So make some decisions. It's a great time to do that. Always consult. Again, we never suggest go out and buy or sell just because, you know, you think it's the right thing to do. It has to be right for you. Consult with CPAs, with financial planners, with real estate professionals, financing. Make sure what you're going to do. The best thing to do, too, if you're selling and then, again, you're going to turn around, and most people, I think 85 or 90% of people, then go buy another home and, of course, they need financing. Really critical, as we talked about before, get yourself set up and in position to make sure you're approved for your purchase while you're putting your house on the market. You just don't want any surprises down
the
road.
So let's talk about that real quick, because we're working on one together.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of people that have anxiety about that process. As they honestly probably should.
Yeah.
It can get complicated. And so the question a lot of people have is, okay, do I sell my house first and get it in contract? And then, well, obviously the first thing that you have to do overall is figure out how much your current home is worth, how much you're going to net out of that deal, and then how much you're going to qualify on the next purchase with the net. That is the first step overall. Then you have to decide how risky do you want to be? How much of a poker player are you? So now you got your pre-approval. Do you want to sell the home, try to negotiate the most favorable terms possible on your home to stay in that home, to give you time to go find another home, and then you're hedging your bet on whether you find that right home.
You may have to go rent for a while.
Yeah. Or if you have parents to live with or whatever else, that you should have a fallback option. In that case, either renting or living with the family member for probably as little as amount of time as you want or as you don't want. But so that's one option. Or the other one is to, depending on where the market is, try to go out and get an offer accepted contingent upon the sale of the house you need to sell. Now, you have to analyze where the market is at, you know, with that decision, because oftentimes, if it's a hot market, it's going to be hard to get your offer accepted with a contingency if you're going to be competing against other offers that don't have a sale contingency, if that makes sense.
Right.
So it's kind of a tightrope you have to kind of walk on and figure out. And my opinion is the least stressful situation is if you got your offer accepted with a contingency and then you try to sell your house, and if you don't sell it, you have an out anyways or whatever. But the more stressful one is if you sell it first and then you go out and try to, like, go on a frenzy trying to find it. But it's a little less stressful if you have a backup plan.
So yeah.
I hope that explains. You know, a lot of people ask me that question, and they have anxiety about it.
Mm-hmm.
It is a stressful situation. I've done it myself, so it's hard.
Well, it is, and this is why, and I know it's not easy to do. It is a very stressful situation. And this is where people like us in the business, you know, I think we make, you know, you would like to think, I think we do make a difference if you're in that camp that you treat it like a business, and that is to sit down with people like this and explain it to them, show them illustrations, give them data, give them examples, historic data, talk them through it, walk them through it, because I know it's difficult to do, but one of the suggestions I make all the time, and I know Mike does too, the reason why it's so important to put pen to paper or pencil or whatever you do and print things out if you have to, if you're a visual person, and look at them, the reason why that's so important is you start to eliminate the emotional decision versus the practical common sense decision. And I'm not saying that no matter what you do, it's going to be an emotional decision. So let's just, we all agree on that. But I think, and I've seen hundreds of, worked with thousands of people, the reason why you sit down and you look at numbers visually, write them down, look at it, whatever it takes, days, weeks, is because then it does then eliminate, not all of it, but don't you see what I'm saying? And typically then you say, okay, my monthly payment's this. This is not so bad. What am I getting stressed out about? Now, my payment's going up $2,000 a month, but I never knew I was going to have that tax benefit. I didn't know I was going to have this write-off. So, man, now it's really only $500 or $600 a month.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, those kinds of things.
I think that's really important, yeah. Right. I think where a lot of the stress comes from, everything you just said is dead on. But where a lot comes from is the actual aspect of moving.
That's true.
It is very
stressful.
Just the
emotional part of
we're
leaving our house.
Yeah. And we got to pack up all this stuff. And
right.
Especially if you have kids. Again, I know I just went through it. You know, it's stressful because it's a lot of stuff going on.
Isn't there a deal where you could pack your kids in the boxes too?
And I put them in a box, tape it up, they're good to go. So, I mean, I think, again, this all circles back into putting together the team.
Yeah.
I mean, people are probably sick of hearing us say that on this podcast.
Sure.
How long have you been doing this for?
8 years.
8 years.
Yeah.
And the radio, even longer.
Oh, yeah.
We probably would be rich if we got a dollar every time we said it's all about the team. But it is, because we just talked about it. It's financing, real estate. You have to get tax advice on this whole situation. Are you going to owe taxes on your own sale, all that other stuff? The mover. Movers are a huge part of it, and a lot of them suck.
Yep.
So you got to make sure you get the right one. So it's all really important to put all these pieces together and not just like fly into it without having a plan.
Yeah. You know?
Because that eliminates a lot of the stress.
Right. Yeah, it does. Absolutely. Look at the market. There's a lot of things going on. But this is, you know, our job, what we do is we pride ourselves in is we study this every day. And I say this, and I know Mike does, I do. I study this information, this market, this stuff on a regular basis. We look at the global markets. We look at things of impact, financing and money and cost of money and all that. So no one's ever going to be perfect. But really what our goal is, as I say, for the last 8+ years, is to provide you, the consumer, as much education information as you can so that you feel more comfortable making wise decisions in and around your real estate. That's simple. It could be anything within that. But I can say, as we kind of finish up today, that 100% really. I have to think hard, Mike, and we've talked about this before, but I like to kind of end with this too, just to remind people. It's always a nervous adjustment when you're buying a home for the first time, when you're moving up, when you buy a rental property, when you do, I get it. But if you do your due diligence and you go in with all the data available and you do your homework and you check off the boxes and then you make that decision, that's all you can do. That's all you can do. And the rest of the things happen that are beyond your control. My point is, I have yet to hear, and maybe, I don't know, maybe 1%, maybe less than 1% of people in my lifetime that ever said buying a real estate was the worst thing you ever did. I don't know, maybe, I don't know, one or two people in the last 50 years.
Yeah,
I just don't hear it.
Yeah.
People that take the long-term view, right?
Yeah, absolutely. People that take the short-term view or don't do the
different
due
story.
Diligence.
Different story.
Then we're hearing curse words and all sorts of other stuff. So,
All right. Well, we're going to wrap it up. Thanks again. Happy New Year for those that are downloading the podcast. A lot of new exciting things to come. You're going to start hearing more and more information on Real Estate Radio Live for sure. And as always, if there's guests, feedback, topics, or anything you want to hear about, you know, check in and let us know. For me, you can reach me, joe@reradiolive.com or 408-838-9060. And Mike?
Yeah, you can go to mikebsells.com or 408-638-9060.
Great. Thanks again for checking in. Happy New Year. We'll be with you next time.
You've been listening to Real Estate Radio Live. For more information on today's program, visit reradiolive.com. That's reradiolive.com. Subscribe to our podcast. Discover more at reradiolive.com.